Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. 29 degrees and mostly cloudy this morning. Today is Wednesday, December 7th, 2011. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. A new report says Southeast Alaska's sea otter boom has cost the region close to $30 million. Most of that is from income that's lost as otters consume shellfish and crabs that otherwise would be harvested by commercial divers and fishermen. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has the details.
Otters were reintroduced to Southeast in the 1960s, and for a while, they remained a rare sight. But recently, their population has boomed, mostly along the outer coast and in southern Southeast. That means the voracious eaters are consuming more and more sea cucumbers, sea urchins, and the giant clam called gooey ducks. Those are species commercial divers harvest.
We don't know what's going to happen with the dive fisheries in the long run. It doesn't look very promising, though.
Phil Dougherty is executive director of the Ketchikan-based Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association. It recently released an economic report from the McDowell Group, a Juneau-based research firm. The report estimates regional otter numbers will soon hit 20,000, more than double the population about 8 years ago. And by 2015, it will more than triple.
We don't see a real management plan out there that would even slow down the growth, let alone trying to keep otters out of areas where they aren't in yet.
The report estimates otters have taken about $22.5 million in the species divers harvest, plus Dungeness crab, using the wholesale value. Add in businesses that support the dive and crab fisheries, and the figure grows to just over $28 million. That includes $9 million of sea cucumbers, just over $4 million in gooey ducks, almost $4.5 million in sea urchins, and about $5.3 million in Dungeness crab.
That's a very narrow way of looking at sea otters' role in the ecosystem.
California activist Jim Curlin lobbies Congress to continue protecting sea otters. He says their return to areas where they were virtually extinct is good for the marine ecosystem.
When you have large colonies of sea urchins, which occur when you don't have sea otters, they can destroy kelp forests, and sea otter predation on sea urchins actually enhances the productivity of kelp forests, and scientists have documented this effect in Southeast Alaska and elsewhere over decades of studying this.
The Marine Mammal Protection Act bans most hunting. Alaska natives can harvest otters for subsistence use, but they can only give or sell whole pelts to other tribal members. Other sales are allowed if the pelt is substantially altered, such as being turned into handicrafts or clothing. Alaska's congressional delegation is pushing legislation that would allow natives to sell whole pelts to anyone. Dougherty says the Dive Fisheries Association funded the recent report to share its concerns.
We need to make sure that everyone is fully aware of what's going to happen with our shellfish fisheries in Southeast Alaska. And if at the end of the day people still don't want to react to it and they will allow the sea otter population to wipe out the shellfish fisheries in Southeast Alaska, that's the decision that we need to know, that our divers need to know at this point in time, so they can make a decision as to what their future is going to be.
A separate U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service research effort is trying to determine the extent of sea otter population growth. It's shown a 13% boost in southern Southeast. Additional research, due out soon, will provide numbers for the northern part of the region. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
You can hear and read more about the sea otter issue through links posted with this story on our website, kcaw.org. We've also posted videos. The large man sporting the magenta hair at the state wrestling tournament in Nikiski this weekend is Mike Kimber, coach of the Mount Edgecombe wrestling team. Kimber's Braves won the 3A Region 5 wrestling tournament on their home turf in Sitka over last weekend. Kimber's pride in his team's performance came at a small cost to his dignity.
Danny Velasner said, "Coach, can we dye your hair if we win regions?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, if we win by 50 points or more, you can dye my hair."
Velasner came in second at 132 pounds, one of 14 Edgecombe wrestlers to qualify for the state tournament this weekend. Velasner was pinned by Sitka High's Will Patrick, who will be headed to Nikiski as the top seed in the weight class. Patrick, joined by Darren Davis, who won by a tech fall at 106, Jaron Sumawang, who won by a pin at 126, and second place finishers Jake Lacari at 145 and Mitchell Board at 170 were able to edge the Sitka Wolves into second place over Craig. But no 3A school had the depth to make it close with Mount Edgecombe. In fact, Kimber credits the depth of his team for the big win.
I was really surprised by the spread. Usually, you know, a 10 or 12 point win is a pretty big win, but 81.5 points at a regional tournament is huge. And we had a lot of kids that stepped up. Even though they weren't point scorers, they were blocking points for other teams by beating other teams, and that allowed for that spread to happen.
Michael Matthew, a junior from Quinnahawk, won at 170 pounds. He says he got a boost from wrestling at home.
One of my goals was to never lose a match in my home gym, and I kept it going for this region title. So I'm pretty happy.
Matthew beat Sitka's Mitchell Board in a one-point decision, 3-2. Board had beaten him earlier in the season in a Sitka-Edgecombe duel. Matthew says he learned from the experience.
First time we wrestled, he beat me, and I kind of thought about it and told myself I had to keep up my tempo and keep myself wrestling hard the whole match instead of just waiting for him, and I had to keep pushing myself.
Paul Johansson says he also learned a lot in earlier matches. The 220-pound regional champion is a freshman from Hoonah. He beat Metlakatla wrestler Tristan Alexander in the finals, but he learned to take nothing for granted.
In the finals match, it was a little tougher than I thought. I went all three rounds with him, and I won by points. So last time I wrestled him, I pinned him in the first round, so it was a little unexpected going all three rounds with him.
Former Sitka High wrestling coach John Hedden returned to town for the regional tournament and sat on the seating committee. His old team is in a rebuilding year, but Hedden says the quality is still there. Sitka wrestlers were in some of the most exciting matches of the tourney, Jake Lacari in particular.
The semifinal match on Friday night against Kirstein of Haynes, and then which Jake won by 1 or 2 points, 14-12, and then the finals match against Thomason of Wrangell, where he lost by 1 point. But, you know, it's one of those things. I'm sure he's disappointed he lost, but it was a great match. And, you know, when you get done with a match like that, you say, oh, man, I feel bad I lost, but God, I wrestled a great match.
Hedden will travel with the team to Nikiski for the state tournament, where Southeast wrestlers often set aside their differences and support each other as a region. Last year, 8 Southeast wrestlers came home with state titles, and this year their prospects are nearly as good. Some wrestlers to watch are Mount Edgecombe's Jalen Prince, a 2-time heavyweight state champion vying for a 3rd title, Sitka's Will Patrick, who lost in the title match last year at 126 pounds and is undefeated this year at 132. Both these wrestlers are top seeds at state. Number 2 seeds heading north from Sitka this year include Mount Edgecombe's Paul Johansson and Shiler Johnson and Darren Davis from Sitka High. The Alaska Department of Transportation is moving forward with a supplemental environmental impact statement for the Juneau Access Project. In February 2009, Federal District Court Judge John Sedgwick directed the State and Federal Highway Administration to redo the original EIS with a full analysis of improvements to Lynn Canal Ferry Service as an alternative to a new highway. Earlier this year, the state exhausted its appeals to the Federal Ninth Circuit Court and decided to proceed with the supplemental EIS. Yesterday, DOT announced that it has contracted with HDR, Inc. to prepare the document. Juneau Access Project Manager Ruben Yost says the update will likely take another year and a half.
Federal highway regulations state that when you do a supplemental EIS, you follow the similar process for an initial EIS in that you produce a draft supplemental EIS that's released to the public. You have public hearings where the public has a chance to comment, and then you analyze those comments and then prepare a final EIS, which is also released for review. And then it's not till that process is complete before Federal Highways can then issue a new record of decision.
The draft supplemental EIS is expected by this time next year, with public hearings in January 2013 and final completion by June 2013. Juneau Access would extend the highway north of the capital city by 50 miles from Echo Cove to the Cotsahine River. It would end at a new ferry terminal where a boat would carry passengers and vehicles the rest of the way up Lynn Canal. The project was challenged in court by the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council and other groups. Though Judge Sedgwick only ruled on the EIS issue, Yost says DOT will look at other claims made in SEAC's lawsuit. SEAC spokesman Dan Lesh is hopeful that the analysis will seriously consider the pros and cons of the proposed road.
We identified what we thought were misleading assumptions about traffic forecasts under the different road and ferry alternatives, ways of analyzing the difference between ferries and roads that we felt like didn't properly capture the difference between roads and ferries and was a little biased towards roads. We identified issues around sea lions, old growth forest habitat, cultural resources, bald eagle nests. All those things are just part of the public interest and they should be addressed.
HDR, the firm DOT contracted to do the supplemental EIS, has extensive experience preparing Federal Highway Administration and environmental documents in Alaska. Yost says the update will cost about $2 million, most of which will be paid for by the Federal Highway Administration. Former Ketchikan Mayor Jack Shea was arraigned yesterday in Ketchikan Superior Court on 91 counts of possession of child pornography. Shea pled not guilty to all charges. A trial is set for February 28th. Ketchikan Assistant District Attorney James Scott told the court that the 91st count was added at the last minute. Scott did not detail the newest count in court, and the court files were not immediately available for public review. Shea waived his right to have a grand jury examine the evidence. Superior Court Judge William Carey explained to Shea that as a first-time felon, he is facing 2 to 12 years in prison for each felony count. Shea is former mayor of both Ketchikan Gateway Borough and the city of Ketchikan. Zone weather today for Sitka, partly cloudy, highs around 36 with light winds. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka.